States was warned long ago.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic process.
And then warned again, not long after.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment.
In fact, the U.S. is still warned to this very day. But are you listening?
What if the American people woke up and understood that the official reasons for going to war are almost always based on lies and promoted by war propaganda in order to serve special interests? What if we as a nation came to realize that the quest for empire eventually destroys all great nations? What if the American people learned the truth, that our foreign policy has nothing to do with national security, that it never changes from one administration to the next?
And this is Republic Theory with Dallas Andrews and Warren Dyson.
And welcome to the show. Good to have you along once again on Republic Theory on Jackalope 105 FM. I'm Dallas Andrews along with Warren Dyson. And continuing our discussion this week on the events of September 11th, and I guess more specifically, the events or lack thereof that took Warren and myself from complete believers of the story to, well, can we use the term skeptics? Does that work?
Well, at the very least, doubters of the story. I think that was really how it evolved, was just doubt at first, and then skepticism, and then belief in an entirely different direction.
As we explained last week, we reiterated the fact that the events of that day, as they happened on that day, were the same for us as they were for anybody. In fact, a number of people were skeptical as to what was going on, probably not to the extent that we see today, but there was just no reason. You know, on my own behalf, and I expressed this last week in probably too much detail, that you had the shock and the sorrow and the anger, pretty much those three phases. And Warren, I think that's what you went through pretty much as well.
Well, I think that was relatively universal. Just about everybody who witnessed it, certainly just about everybody in America who witnessed it, felt exactly the same thing. But that is a positive note. That's a unifying thing for us to point out, is our skepticism for that day didn't start that day.
No, not at all. In fact, on my own behalf, we've talked about this before, and I think I went just over 2 years, as did a number of professionals in numerous industries that ended up being or ended up having the same questions and the same degree of skepticism as you and I do. Going into what started to turn me around, you'll recall that it wasn't long after 9/11 that there was a French author whose name I forget. We'll try to throw that into the show later on. But there was some talk, and we had some sound last week of the last three presidents, well, actually the last two along with the current, openly stating that 9/11 is not something to be questioned. It is not something to be questioned. We discussed the curiosity of that and the inappropriateness of that at the very least. And so that seemed to work, but at the same time, the mainstream press seemed to continue addressing certain factions of people, in this case, a French author. You remember the Freedom Fries?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Anything French was being demonized at the time to a ridiculous degree.
Yeah, it was just like back in 1993, the Cowboys were hosting the Philadelphia Eagles in the playoffs. And so as a cute little gimmick, one of the grocery store chains took Philadelphia cream cheese off the shelves the week of the game. Okay, haha, great. But even in the weeks that followed 9/11, you first started hearing about books and websites and at some point down the road documentaries, which I never knew anything about. I never cared about conspiracy anything or anything that had to do with questioning 9/11. I had complete confidence that our military will get Osama bin Laden. And for the most part, what I imagined happening is basically how it started, albeit a little bit late. Even in my opinion at the time, I was surprised that we didn't have him by the end of that week. But nonetheless, as things transpired, you go from, you know, 9/11 fading as it did for you, and then the drums of war in Iraq are beating for at least 9 months plus as that massive mobilization was going on. I still wasn't questioning September 11th, even as that was coming about. You just had this blind trust in the government, in the powers that be, if you will, that that this was part of the issue. It had not occurred to me that, wait a minute, Saddam Hussein doesn't even have a military and hasn't had one for better than a decade at this point. Things like that simply didn't occur. And then one thing led to another, and on a particular evening, somewhere in late 2003, possibly the very beginning of 2004, I'm home after work, still working in the radio business at the time, back in California, and I end up noticing on one of the mainstream news websites, CNN or MSNBC, I don't remember which one, but another story, and for the first time in quite some time, about conspiracy theories. And again, we were back on this French thing. I'm going to have to find out who that author is because I hate not knowing the name, but there was a particular website called Hunt the Boeing, which was the very website that this mainstream news story dealt with. And I read this story, and I guess I felt somewhat challenged in terms of just looking into it to see how ridiculous this could be, because we all saw planes hitting buildings, right? And so there really wasn't much to question, and most of that probably being driven by the emotional impact of September 11th. But nonetheless, off I go to Hunt the Boeing. And when I arrive at this website, it's not very advanced, you know, looks like very low budget, very simple site. And Warren, you've played Where's Waldo, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Where's Waldo, and my, of course, my recent favorite, Where's the Smart Car, which I showed you the other day.
Yeah, right. In other words, things that are right in front of your face, yet they're very difficult to see. Okay, that's the point. But I can find Waldo. And so I arrive at this website, and the challenge is really simple. It's find the Boeing. You know, the website's called Hunt the Boeing, so the point of it is pretty clear early on. And so the website, which is still up to this day, you can check this out if you so choose, huntheboeing.com. The challenge is simple. Find a Boeing in any of these photos of the Pentagon. Now, it was beginning to occur to me as I first started reading what little bit of dialogue or script there is on this site, that there really wasn't a lot of coverage of Washington, D.C. There was a whole bunch of New York, obviously. I would say the footage of the Twin Towers and the buildings being hit by airplanes represented 95% of the coverage that day, and you could chalk up maybe 4% for Washington, maybe 1% for the Shanksville, Pennsylvania situation, which we will discuss at length within the show here. But upon examining these photos of the Pentagon, all after the fact, some not long after the fact, I believe others, a few of the photos were taken either the day after or within just a couple of days after. And as I get to looking at these photos, I went there with the sole intention of finding an airplane. I just couldn't fathom what could be so hard about this, because my mind was conditioned to believe exactly what I was told. After all, we had two airplanes hitting in New York. Pentagon, you know, they released some frames of video footage and whatnot, and I guess that seemed to suffice. Again, never really thought about it a whole lot. And in Pennsylvania, it occurs to you that if I ever even thought about it, it's out in the middle of nowhere. There wouldn't have been cameras waiting for that. But upon closer examination, my own, just my own free mind thinking about these photos that I'm looking at the Pentagon, I go from one photo to another, to another, to another, to another. And at no point can I find anything that proves that there's an airplane there. And so I try to explain this away. Well, you know, maybe it just broke up. And then I start realizing that the dimensions of the damage path, which I did this on my own as well. I'm not a genius. But one of the first thing I did was look up the wingspan of a Boeing 757. I believe it's 158 feet, if I'm not mistaken, maybe a few inches in there. But nonetheless, the damage path after the collapse of the facade is still basically a little over half the overall width of the wingspan of a 757. In other words, it's far too small. And then it occurs to me for the first time ever that you've got photos of the facade of the Pentagon, the outer wall with the windows and the fire trucks and all the smoke that precede the collapse. That partial angular collapse going from facing the picture from the right to the left going down. And this struck me as very odd because we didn't even really have a hole in the building. We didn't have a giant gash, much like what you saw at the World Trade Center. And Warren, I would think that some of that resonated with you as well?
Well, it did. My initial concern, I suppose, when I saw the Pentagon footage, some of the photographs that you're describing, is steel is far and away harder than stone. Even steel-reinforced stone isn't going to hold up as well as a steel beam will in that type of impact. And so I expected actually to see far more initial damage at the Pentagon than we did at the World Trade Center. I mean, if you look at the World Trade Center photos, you practically have Roadrunner and Coyote-style airplane-shaped holes in the sides of the buildings. You could see where the vertical stabilizer is. You could see where the engines impacted. I mean, it was a very obvious wound in the World Trade Centers. Whereas on the Pentagon, you have a relatively small, rounded hole impacting the side of the building.
And that's the best way you can really describe it. You've got this, before the collapse, you have a hole that measures somewhere between, the estimates I've heard, between 15 and 20 feet. Prior collapse of the facade, which measured approximately 90 feet. That's a base path in the game of baseball. If you've been to a baseball game, from home plate to first base is about how wide that gash in the Pentagon was. In the photos that you've seen of the day after, or even later that day, when the roof is mostly gone. So how is it that you arrive at something like this? I look at photos of the punch-out wound, and is it the C-ring? Is that correct?
Yeah, it's that C-ring. It's the third ring into the Pentagon, and it's the interior wall on the C-ring. So essentially you're looking six exterior walls in to the Pentagon.
And yet some parts of this airplane are able to either penetrate through multiple layers of the building or not even scratch it on the outside. And I can't make any sense of this as far as the 757. And, you know, as you were mentioning at the World Trade Center just moments ago, tail, wing marks, engine marks, okay? You don't find any of these things. So even despite all of this, I go to hunt the Boeing intending to find the Boeing, and I didn't end up doing it. And so I still felt like, you know, maybe there's some photoshopping here. It sure doesn't look like it, because I've seen some of these photos before. They don't look like that, but let's make sure. Let's go check out other mainstream media outlets. And, I mean, Warren, as I've told you before, I looked at other photos. I even found a few more photos. And these were exactly the same. I kept an article of Newsweek that week, the week of September 11th myself. I looked at photos in there. Same photos. Same centerfold of another magazine of the Pentagon. And this was the same stuff. You know, the fire engine, the fire trucks in the same place. Flames burning the same way on the outside of the building. And nothing resembling an airplane. So I would have to say, just from the get-go, that this is absolutely what I may have the color wrong, but this, in fact, was the red pill that I swallowed without even knowing that I was swallowing it, if you will.
Right. Well, and that's one of the interesting, I suppose, side notes on this particular evolution, this path and trail that we walked down, is it wasn't an intentional thing. I mean, we just kept running into things that we could not reconcile with the official story.
And as innocent as that was, common sense, in my case, definitely overrode the blind allegiance to what the media was telling me. And understand, I was working in the business. I was not in television, but I was in radio. And things started happening very fast. I started factoring in the consolidation that I was working in, the automation, started learning more about who does own these television stations. Most people have no idea, for example, that NBC is, in fact, owned by General Electric, okay, one of the most massive war-making machine corporations, war profiteers there is. Now, you start to just piece this puzzle together. You look at photos, you apply basic common sense, and you quickly realize that, I mean, the lawn of the Pentagon looks like you could put a putt-putt golf course on it, you know.
Oh, it was absolutely pristine, and that's one of the things that when I looked at the photos and compared it to eyewitness statements that I had heard of that day that indicated that the aircraft had bounced off the lawn and into the side of the Pentagon, I would expect there to be something on the lawn, but it is an absolutely gorgeous, pristine lawn. There's no mark on it whatsoever. It's just this pure green carpet of grass, and there's no damage path, no debris, no charring, no scarring. There's nothing on there that would indicate that an airplane had struck the lawn and then bounced into the Pentagon, despite what the eyewitnesses at the time had said.
And I think common sense would tell us that any lawn comprised of grass or anything for that matter is not going to be airplane proof. You can look at photos of other crashes and see how, in most crashes, airplanes do make an attempt to land, and there's a tremendous skid mark.
I believe now is the time to ask questions. Now is the time to do your own research. Take advantage of the tools that are out there. If no other reason, go out there and try to prove us wrong. Try to show us compelling evidence the other way. And again, if you find that evidence, if you find a good argument against it, email it to us. Again, republictheory@aol.com. But again, now is the time.
And we do appreciate you tuning in. And please, ask these questions while you still can, because if you continue not doing so, you never know when the day could come when you cannot ask those questions. For Warren Dyson, I am Dallas Andrews. It's been a pleasure having you. We will see you next week, Saturday night, 7 o'clock, for Republic Theory, right here on Jackalope 105 FM. Thanks for tuning in.